Let's begin with a question, can we? I'm sure we've all been burned by someone. Someone's broken our trust. But what is your earliest memory of having your trust broken? I know that's not a fun memory. But does something come to your mind? I was thinking about that over the last couple weeks as I was leading up to this message. And probably one of my earliest memories is something that happened to me on the playground. I'm guessing I was about 6 years old. I was at summer camp out in the sticks of central Alberta, one of the ugliest summer camp environments you could imagine. I don't know what my mom was thinking. Sending me out there was like torture. No, there were moments, but I was out on the playground. I'm on this teeter-totter with this guy who I don't really know well. I remember that. I remember thinking he's a nice kid. And we're on there. And you know, if you've ever been on the teeter-totter, right? It's kind of, you're just going back and forth. These were kind of old school teeter-totters. They're monsters. And so when you got up there, you were up there, right? And we were kind of pushing back and forth. You know the game, you know, when all of a sudden you hit the ground and you push off as fast as you can. You make the other guy kind of launch up in the air. I think we were doing some of that. We were laughing. And this one point, I was on my way up. He was on his way down. I'm laughing, and he hops off. How many have ever had that kind of experience? Okay, I'm not alone. I'm one of the few with scars still of this. I remember coming down, and I was off balance when it happened. My one leg was underneath the teeter-totter. So when I landed, not just the weight of my body, but also the plank and everything coming down, it felt like my ankle got crushed. And, I mean, it kind of torqued my leg over and kind of threw me off the thing. And, I mean, I remember squealing like a little pig. I was just in so much pain, and I was trying to get up, and there were only a few kids out in the playground in this particular time. I was crying, and my mom wasn't anywhere around. I'm looking around, and you know, obviously I didn't break anything, because I don't even know if my mom would even know that this even happened. She listens to all these podcasts. She's like, Jeff, why didn't you tell me? It's all right, Mom, I'm okay. But I remember after the pain of the ankle started to subside, a new pain began to emerge. And I can only describe it as this pain of betrayal. Began thinking about that kid and why he would do that to me. After I was kind of rubbing out my eyes and whatever, I don't even know where he went. I think he probably thought it was a fun joke or something, but when he saw me screaming, he was like out of there. But I just remember being so shocked, thinking he seemed like such a nice guy. He seemed to like me. And he would do that to me. Here I am. I mean, I was 6 years old. Here I am. Like, how many years later? 22? 23? You jerks, you had too much fun laughing at that. Just turned 49. 46, 43 years later. 43 years later. And that is just a stupid little teeter-totter accident. Teeter-totter betrayal. It's crazy, isn't it? The power of broken trust. Pain. Every day, relationships suffer damage because someone jumps off the proverbial teeter-totter and unsuspecting people crash. You make an agreement with someone and you keep your end of the deal, but they default. They walk away. Oh yeah, sorry about that. Someone says one thing to your face, and then when you're gone, they do something completely different, or they say something completely different. Every day someone learns of a broken confidence, a secret that you shared, that you trusted with someone. It gets told to someone you didn't want hearing it. Every day someone learns about a story that they were told that was only half true. Some of you will realize that the person you hired is nowhere near the person they said they were. The teeter-totter moments are everywhere. And they cause pain, they cause heartache, they cause disruption in our lives. Sometimes it's just a little pain, sometimes it's just like a little paper cut. You just go, ah, fix auto. You just go, wow, I can't believe you do that. Sometimes, though, the pain is massive. The betrayal is like a knife through the heart. And it's not just the initial pain of the realization that someone betrayed you. The greatest concern is the long-term damage to that relationship. That really stings. It was Nietzsche who said, you know, I'm not upset that you lied to me. I'm upset that I can no longer believe you. Life and relationships get hard. They get really hard when people aren't trustworthy. How many can say amen to that? They get really, really hard. You get burned a few times, and you can find yourself all of a sudden with these walls starting to grow, these emotional defense mechanisms, where you can just feel them as people are talking. You hear what they're saying, but you're trying to figure out what are they really saying. What's their angle here? Why are you doing that? Someone even compliments you and you're going, what do you want? Resentment and bitterness begin to creep in. It affects your outlook. It affects the way that you see the world. It's funny. It can weave into this place where you even start to contaminate your healthy relationships. Someone over here does something to you, and now you start looking at everyone with this lens. And if it works its way in, pretty soon what ends up happening is you contaminate, you push away people that are wanting so badly to have you in your life. I'm telling you, life gets really hard when trustworthiness is suffering. It can leave you not just resentful, not just bitter, but lonely, isolated. I think Jesus was spotting this kind of stuff going on in his community. I'm not positive. It's so many times the Bible records stories, but it doesn't always tell you everything that was going on that led up to that story, what was being witnessed and why he needed to address it. But I think this is the very kind of thing that was going on one day when Jesus says, you know what, just do this. Just say a simple yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond that. From the evil one. Now, I can't tell you everything exactly that was going on, but I can give you a little bit of backstory that kind of makes sense of these words. You see, for thousands of years in the ancient Near East culture, the making of vows and oaths was very common. People would make vows to the gods. You've probably heard someone, or maybe you've almost done it yourself, where you're in a pickle and you look up to the heavens and say, God, if you get me out of this one, I promise, I will. This was very common for thousands of years. People would negotiate with the gods. God, if you will protect my crop from hail, from this oncoming storm, if you will protect us from drought or fire, I promise you I will stop doing this. I will give this away. I will do this. They would bargain with God, and in essence, they would make this oath. And making an oath or a vow to the gods was probably one of the most extreme things you could do. I mean, it was the most serious thing you could do. Because anyone doing it in that day and age knew that if they broke that oath, what they were doing was they were inviting a curse, a supernatural repercussion. You were giving God the opportunity, the permission in their minds, they believed, to come back and just hammer you with some kind of consequence. You didn't swear to God unless you meant it. You didn't bargain with God unless you're ready to fulfill that vow. So back in the day, they would engage in these oaths and vows as a normal way of, even in business with each other. It was like an ultimate way to be able to give certainty, to build trust with someone you're in a business dealing with. You look at them and you could say, I swear to God, I will follow through on my end. People go, oh, okay, you're serious. I used to do that as a kid to my sister all the time. Didn't realize. I was part of a long lineage. This is serious business. I didn't realize it at the time. So I swear to God. But you know what? And so people would do that. It had meaning. There was a sacredness. There was a heaviness when you invoked the name of God in an oath or a vow. Here's the thing. Over time, people started gaming the system. Now, I'm kind of giving you Cole's notes on this thing. So if you want to go to town and get technical with me, we'll do that offline, all right? People over time started getting creative with their vows and their oaths. They started coming up with other ways and other kinds of oaths that kind of got around the God card, but still sounded as serious as the God card. I swear on my mother's grave. It was the equivalent of those kinds of things where they would make an oath. It sounds really serious, but somehow in their minds, it was dodging the bullet from any consequence if they defaulted. Make sense? Jesus starts saying, oh, I'll get to that. They would come up with all kinds of different oaths. I swear by heaven. I swear by earth. I swear by the gray hair on my head. They would come up with all kinds of different things. The problem was over time, vows and oaths started losing their value. Someone would be claiming, I swear. People say, I'm not buying it. No way. Trust eroding in the community. Skepticism, cynicism. So Jesus is teaching one day and he addresses this erosion in the community. He says, I know that our ancestors were big on these vows. I know that you can read for us in the Old Testament. You can go through and there is a pile of different instructions where it says, you must follow through on the vows that you have made. And there's all this instruction. Jesus is saying, I get that our ancestors are big on these vows, but I'm saying no more vows. No more. It's BS. And you know it's hurting us. And you say it coming out of your mouth, and as soon as the words are coming out, no one's buying it. And they're falling dead. Stop making vows. Let your yes, just a simple, I will, yes, I will, or no, I won't. Let's stop it there. Now, what's interesting is at this time that Jesus is making this teaching, a little bit more backstory, there's this group called the Essenes. They were a monastic kind of sect. They're part of the Jewish tribe, but they believed in being separate from the community. So they were like maybe Hutterites out on a colony, you know, if you can think of it that way. Not like Hutterites, but living apart from the real world. The thing about the Essenes, I mean, if you think of the Dalai Lama, these Tibetan monks, maybe that'll get you closer to it. But when these people we stepped into everyday life, when they walked into society, there was something about the Essenes. The Essenes didn't believe in vows. They were forbidden. They said, no one that's a part of our tribe does that kind of stuff. We don't do it. So the Essenes, when they walked in town, the word on the street was, when an Essene said, yes, let's make a deal, that Essene's word was like a contract. It was honor. When they said, let's make a deal. I'll give you 15 chickens for whatever. And you made the deal. When you were dealing with a scene, no one questioned it. It was like, it's good. When you asked an Essene for their opinion on something or where they stand on it, and they told you, you knew that they were giving you the goods. There was no questioning the Essenes. Scholars I was reading this week saying they thought that Jesus had been incredibly impacted by this practice of the Essenes. We don't know for sure. Perhaps Jesus had watched them. Perhaps he had watched how effortlessly they could engage in business. How there was no fighting to make someone believe them so that they could actually engage in a business transaction. Perhaps it was the way that they worked with each other in relationship and the deep bonds and trust that they had built. We don't necessarily know. All we know is the Essenes, their word had power. I want you to think just for a moment. Who in your life would you say is like that? Who is someone in your life who it's like when they make a commitment, you can take it to the bank. You can trust them. When they say they got your back, you know they got your back. When they make a commitment to you, they're following through. Think of someone in your life who is like an Essene. Think about how easy life can be interacting with a person like that. When you feel like you can trust someone, there's no second guessing their words. The self-editing, the worrying what they might do with what you tell them, the safety that comes, where you can open up without fear of judgment or fear of them twisting something on you. No, there's just this level of comfort where you can just be yourself with them. Where when you're in trouble and you can go to them, you know you can count on them. Even if they can't do much, you know that they're there and they're wanting to. I think Jesus was saying we gotta build that more. We gotta become more of those people. We need to mimic them here. Because life is becoming too hard. If you just step out of the story and we just look at our society right now, I can't believe a thing that I'm reading on the internet from the major news networks. Like, I'm just looking out, I'm just like going, it just seems like there were just lie after lie after lie. And so there's all this noise. And I'm sitting there having to decipher who I can truly believe. Jesus says, this is BS. It's not the way it was meant to be. I don't think he said it was BS, but. Experts tell us that trustworthiness is a result of the combination of three things. Honesty. Reliability and competence. You can be incredibly reliable. You can show up every day 15 minutes early, and you can not have a lying bone in your body. You can be the most honest person on the planet. But if you show up claiming that you can get that job done and you can't, if you overestimate your abilities and you botch the job, trustworthiness scores. People start holding you at arm's length. You can be the most competent parent, able to cook, make money, change the oil in the cars. You can be Johnny on the spot, knowing at every which way how to do what is needed. You can be the most reliable parent, even there to tuck your kid in every night, attend every one of his ball games. But if you lie to them, if they spot dishonesty in you, you can find your own loved ones pushing you away, going, I don't know if I can trust you. you can have the most unbelievable relational skills. I mean, competent in engaging in relationship, empathy, understanding what your partner needs. And you can demonstrate high levels of honesty, telling the truth no matter how hard or ugly it may be at times. But if you are kind of hit and miss on showing up when they need you, you make commitments and have a habit of blowing them off from time to time. You see, three different characteristics: honesty, reliability, and competence. And when the three come together, it's like the perfect trifecta for trustworthiness to build. But you take any one of those things apart from the equation, and things start getting wobbly. Now, let me just step back from this topic. I'm going to be very honest with you. This was one message assignment I did not want to do. When Vince and I started looking over this series, I said, hey, in my head, I'm going, give me any topic but this one. And I'll tell you why. Because if you studied my track record and you asked those closest to me, trustworthiness scores are probably not something I'm proud of. Partially in the honesty area and definitely in the reliability area. It won't come as a surprise for many of you that have been here for a long time, but I don't know why, from the time I was at a young age, I developed an aversion, a gravitational pull toward people pleasing. Likely something that happened in my formative years when, I don't know, something happened and taught me that I need people to like me, to approve of me in order for me to feel valuable or for them to stay involved in my life. So from the time I was young, I learned how to say the right things, to do the right things, to be the person that people wanted me to be, so that I could kind of earn their love. That was what was going on in my head. Now, I understand the sickness better now. But at the time, I didn't even realize what was cooking up. I just felt like, man, I think people in my life just thought, wow, that Jeff's a good kid. No, I was desperately not wanting them to leave. That's what was going on. But this sickness, when it gets a hold of me, it starts speaking to me when people ask a favor of me. I have a very difficult time of saying no. So something inside me says, if I say no, our relationship will change. They will think differently of you, Jeff. It's like this voice in the back of my mind. It's only when I'm really aware I can hear it. It's so embedded. In my most unaware and most unconscious moments, I will say yes way more than I should. I've committed to stuff in my past that stretched me so far and wide. Why? Because I was desperate for people to like me. I recognize now that there were people in my life who took great advantage of that. I'd like to get angry at them, but it was me that was saying yes. They could ask all I want. I just didn't know how to say no. Sadly, I was chronically making way more commitments than I could keep. That's the truth. I was writing checks on my time and energy that I couldn't cash. And what's really tragic is the people that suffered the most were the people that I loved the most. I would find myself saying yes to strangers. And then when my account ran empty, when I ran out of time, it was my family that were taking the brunt of it. It got so bad, I almost lost my marriage at one point. Competence? Oh, I could get the job done. Reliability? Oh, I was hosed. The honesty part was, there's often times when I need to say something, and it was the honest, the ugly truth, and I didn't want to do it. And so I shy away from that. So that's my story. That's how I relate to this. This is why I don't like talking about trustworthiness, because I don't have the greatest track record. And I'm growing more aware. I'm starting to hear those boards talking, and I'm overruling it. But I'm telling you, it's cost me. And so I'm invested in this message this morning, in case you haven't told. I hate untrustworthiness, especially when I'm looking at it in the mirror, because it kills relationships. I hate it when I say something to someone I love and they go, "Are you sure?" And they do it in a kind way, but I know what they're saying. Perhaps some of you can relate to that part. I was talking with a close friend of mine this week, someone who is much different than me. If there is a picture of an Essene, it is this guy. I say, "Hey, let's go out and do this." What does he say? Let me check. I say, "No, just say yes. Let's go." He says, "No, he says, "Oh, I'll get back to you. I got to check my calendar. I got to check with my spouse." He's so premeditated. I go, "Oh, yeah, of course. I was just about to do that, too." As we chatted, though, about this area, and I told him about my struggle with trustworthiness, he said something that caught me off guard from his perspective of himself. He said, "Sometimes, Jeff, I'm afraid of disappointing others, or that I won't be able to fulfill the commitment. I'm maybe worried that I might fail, or that I might look stupid in stepping up and doing whatever yes involves. So much so that I just don't commit." His whole story was, "You might overcommit, but there are times when people in my life need me to step up and I don't. I undercommit. And I think that hurts my trustworthiness." I didn't know if he was saying that just to make me feel good, but I think what he was saying is true. And I think there might be some in this room who are listening that are saying, "No, I never overcommit." But maybe, perhaps, it's on the flip side of that, where some fear inside you says, "Don't you dare say yes to that, even though you could, and you could do it better than probably most." Experts tell us that under the competence area is this needed skill set of empathy. Competence, that category, under it, a big piece of the competence thing is empathy. You'll know this to be true. If you want someone to be able to trust you, they need to believe that you're in it for them. They actually care about them. You care about what they're doing, and you're not just using them for some kind of selfish agenda or reason. How many know what that feels like when someone's engaging with you and you can feel, you can smell agenda on them, and you're going, I can't hear a word you're saying right now because you're coming for something. You want something from me. What am I to you? Empathy allows us to be able to connect with someone and communicate to them that you care. How many know that there are many doctors out there that are, they're honest, and they have skill sets that would say that they're competent, but man, when they have lack empathy, you don't want them in the room. Empathy is this ability and willingness to understand, to feel what someone is feeling. It's an invaluable competency for building trust. You can be honest and reliable as the day is long, following through on every commitment you make. But if a person feels like you don't really care, trust levels struggle. And I'm telling you, there are many kids, even in this building today, that could describe what that feels like, including my kids at times. There are likely some here who struggle with trustworthiness, not because of honesty, not because of reliability, but because perhaps you've just overestimated your abilities more often than not. You thrive on the mantra of faking it till you make it. you believe that the opportunity will go away if you can't just fudge the numbers and get in the door. But more often than not, what ends up happening is there's an exposure to what you're not. That might be the case for some here. As I'm talking this morning, I'm wondering if any of this is resonating inside of you. I wonder if there's even one of these areas, competence, honesty, reliability, if one of them you can spot and say, ooh, that's a weakness in me. That part. Let me ask you something. How different would our lives be if we were to take our trustworthiness up just even 5% or 10% this week? The people in our lives, how we would impact them. What if those of you who are commonly or more often than not late for work just began showing up even 50% of the time more on time? What if those of us who often find ourselves exaggerating, telling stories, going for the laugh, what if we could catch ourselves in those moments and go, rather than my wife catching me, and saying, it didn't quite go down that way. Sometimes it's not as fun, but it leads to more honesty, right? And trustworthiness. What if we as friends and parents grew in our relational competencies? Perhaps putting down our premeditated judgments, our ability to just turn off what we're thinking and listen, to build that empathy. What if employers and managers were more transparent and honest with their workers? Not just about good things, but also of their struggles. I mean, what if alimony payments were never late? What if deadbeat dads and mums were a thing of the past, never, ever being talked about anymore because they just came through as promised? What if we stopped saying things like, you know, we should get together sometime? Or, you know what, I'll be praying for you. The little things we say and do that break down trust. Let me ask you something. How trustworthy are you? If you were to think deeply about these three characteristics and your track record with them, can you spot one area you need to work on? And would you be willing to this week? I realize I can't control other people's trustworthiness, and I'm sure every one of us has a story of someone that dropped us off the top of a teeter-totter. But I can't control that guy's actions. I can't control those people. I can control mine. And I don't know about you, but I no longer want to hear people saying, I was at the top of that teeter-totter and Jeff bailed on me. I don't want to be that guy. And I want this community to be that kind of community that just says, man, if we need help, we can go to that community. Or when they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it. Jesus says, just simply say yes, I will, or no, I won't. No more. For the people pleasers in the room, stop saying yes all the time. Maybe that's your action this week. Just say yes one last time this week. And maybe for you on the flip side, maybe you need to stop saying no so often. You need to step up. Prove your trustworthiness. You can do it. I don't know where your lowest piece is, but would you do something this week? And next week, maybe we can look at our trustworthiness levels and we can see them bouncing a little higher. And we'll feel it in our relationships. Let's be more trustworthy this week. Okay? Let's do that.